Hello and welcome to the Free Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Eng, here again with Tim Stratton. And we're excited to be able to talk about really more than just arguments, more than just as far as like when you talk to an apologist, it might be the stigma to hear premise one, premise two, conclusion. But we want to do more than that because we want to equip you so that you know how to use what you're learning in a way that's practical. Because for me, when I think of an apologist, at least maybe an apologist before this recent trend has been coming around, especially with what our vision is to be equippers of the church, it's easy to think of an apologist as the old guy in the suit debating another old guy in a suit. And for us, though, we want a relational approach. We want you to know Christianity and know the ins and outs of these arguments so that you can engage the world in a way that's, like I said, relational. You have a friendship with the person. It's not just Facebook arguments that usually get nowhere. Sometimes there are things that come from that, and it's good, but there's usually a relationship there prior to those conversations. And so we want to have this discussion today, especially about the practical side. And what's amazing to me is the journey that God has brought Tim Stratton on and bringing him very specific experience, and especially in relating to ministry and youth and adults. And just before he was Tim Stratton the apologist, he was Tim Stratton the pastor. And so that's what he brings to the table as far as his approach to apologetics. And so today we want to talk about how you can weave apologetics into your normal ministry life so that it's not just geeking out, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think of the story from recently. Well, before we actually get there, one thing that we do for Free Thinking Ministries is people will come and we'll text Tim or they'll email him questions. And so we have a couple questions queued up that people have actually asked Tim, and then Tim has gotten the chance to respond to. And so you want to just go through those first couple questions?
Sure. Really quick? Let's start out with one. This is from a friend of mine. I met him once when I spoke in Miami last year. And ever since then, we've developed a Facebook friendship.
Yeah.
He texted me a great question the other day, and I'd just like to read this. It says, "Hey, Tim, I hope you're doing well. Thank you for always being willing to answer my questions. I really appreciate you. I was wondering, does apologetics ever make you feel disconnected from God?
Mm.
I ask because often I feel like I know God is with me, but I don't feel like he is with me. I love apologetics, and I'm grateful for this area of study. And I feel like apologetics is very important to my faith, but sometimes I feel like I've been focusing so much on the arguments of God's existence, and I've stopped focusing on God and forming a relationship with him. Have you ever experienced that? And if so, do you have any suggestions?" Well, what a fantastic question.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and he is not the first person to ask me questions like this. But this is how I responded over text. I said, "Yes, I have experienced this. And when I find myself going in this direction, it's important for me to position myself in reading the Bible, listening to worship music, and just talking to Jesus in prayer. Apologetics is awesome because when we don't feel like God is with us, we still know that he is." Mm. But it is awesome to experience God in a tangible way through a real relationship also, not just knowing about him.
Yeah.
Most Christians are only feelings-oriented. It is vital to have not just feelings, but knowledge as well. It's not an either-or, it's a both-and. It takes intentional work at times to stay balanced.
Yeah.
And he responded and said, "Thank you, that was much needed."
Yeah.
And I think it's just important for all of us to remember. It is vital to understand these things, to know why we believe what we believe. and to know that there is good reason to hold our theological beliefs, the good reason to know that God exists, good reason to know that God raised Jesus from the dead, good reason to know that our lives are eternal and that they really matter because they are eternal, and good reason to know how we ought to live and behave and think and act. It's good to know these things. It's important to know what we believe and why we believe it. But so often, apologists can get just focused on this, on the what and the why.
Right.
And we forget to develop a relationship with the who.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that's what we were, even before the show, we were talking about just this holistic approach to apologetics, that if you're an apologist, that doesn't mean you don't need a relationship with Jesus or something.
Right.
You know, it's just because you know the arguments and they're very powerful and they're very good. And it's certainly, especially for some people more than others, it's especially what they need. But that doesn't mean that it all of a sudden you don't need to pray.
Right.
You don't need your quiet time alone, like Jesus talks about, just shutting yourself away with Jesus, you know, and being with him. Like, just because you have these arguments doesn't mean you don't need that regular connection. And especially for me as a worship leader, I don't know if you've ever heard of the book Doxology and Theology. Have you heard of that book?
No. Nope.
Well, it's a book basically where there's a bunch of compilation of articles or of authors, and they all contribute to the book. And the chapter that I was reading was about how our theology should fuel and propel and prop up our doxology or our praise. And that's basically the premise of the book. And their comparison is, it's one that I've heard a million times, but they don't just throw contemporary music under the bus like a lot of people do. They'll have the comparison where, you know, on one side it's, your love never fails, never gives up, never runs out on me, and that's the chorus 17 times. And they'll put that next to, you know, let thy goodness like a fetter bind my wandering heart to thee, prone to wander, and it goes on. It's very rich, you know, lyrics. And I agree. But I don't want to throw, you know, contemporary music under the bus, because I love contemporary music. That's my style.
Right.
But our theology propels our doxology. So when we know the truth, that's what can then create deep emotions and deep gratitude and thankfulness toward God because of what we know. Because Jesus said, it's the truth that sets you free, not emotions that will set you free.
That's right.
You know? But these emotions can be grounded in the truth. And so that's, you know, that's just one little quick example of how a worship leader could use apologetics, because that can fuel your passion for God. And so there are other ways that pastors can use theology in ways that you may not expect. There may be times that you might think this is a mundane thing, but then something comes up and you find yourself on the spot and you may not know. And so we want to equip you. So, Tim, there was a funeral that you were a part of recently, and just tell the story.
Oh, wow. Well, my neighbor, who I've been discipling over the past few years, you know, I've been teaching him all about apologetics. He knows the Kalam cosmological argument. He knows the free thinking argument. He knows the ontological argument. He knows them all. And he even knows how to answer the problem of evil. Why would God allow evil and suffering and things like that? But he became face to face with this problem firsthand. It wasn't just an intellectual exercise any longer when he found out that his wife was diagnosed with cancer. And his wife, who also my neighbor, she died a few weeks ago, and at 31 years old, with two little girls, a 7-year-old and 12-year-old, I believe. And just devastating. And he asked me to do the funeral. You know, even though I'm not employed by the church any longer, I'm still recognized as a pastor. And so I can still, do funerals and weddings and things like that. And so, of course, I said I would do the funeral. And, you know, at the beginning, at least here in Nebraska, the funeral home director brings all the family and relatives in before the funeral, and they look at all the flowers, and they read from, you know, they let the family know who sent the flowers. And then typically the pastor gives a little prayer, and then we go back and we wait for the funeral to start before we come back in. Well, after the funeral director spoke, and then he asked me to come up and pray, and I gave a little prayer, and I was getting ready to sit back down, and somebody from the back row raised their hand, one of the relatives, and I said, "Yeah, do you have a question?" He said, "Can you tell me why God would let this happen?" And I was just floored. I've done a few funerals, and I've never experienced anything like this happen. And he went on, "Can you please explain why God would let this woman die, this mom die right now?" And I said, "Well, do you want an intellectual answer to this question during this time of deep emotion?" And he said, "Yes." And he goes, "And I'm not the only one here that feels that way." And he pointed to this other guy, and he goes, he feels that way too. And this guy in the front row, he kind of looks up at me and raises his hand and says, "Yeah, I want to answer too."
Wow.
And so on the spot, I had to answer why God would allow not just pain and evil, but suffering and death.
Mm-hmm. Before you go on.
Yeah.
What would you say? I mean, how many people can be put on the spot like that and you don't feel something warm rolling down your leg?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, right. You're thinking, "Oh my goodness." Because the question is more than just why would God allow evil in general.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, why did God allow this specific person to die at this time in this circumstance? Why?
Yeah.
That is a deep, deep question.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you respond?
Well, I don't know exactly why certain individual things might happen, like the specific death. But I do know why we live in a world in which God allows horrible things to happen, from our moral choices, but also just natural evil itself, including cancer, which is a horrible thing. Why would God allow these horrible things? Why would God create a world suffused with not just moral evil, but natural evil also? Things like cancer that lead to death. Even evil that seems to be gratuitous from our point of view. And, you know, basically what I said was that, well, perhaps we need to consider things from a divine perspective, as the Apostle Paul did. And I took him to 2 Corinthians 4:17 and said that Paul explains why a world full of suffering is good. He says, as these light momentary afflictions prepare us for eternity. Again, that's 2 Corinthians 4:17. And that is one of the most powerful verses in the Bible, as far as I'm concerned, that these light momentary afflictions prepare us for eternity. Basically, that's a nice way of saying no pain, no gain. Hmm. You know, perhaps God might allow a world suffused with evil, pain, and suffering and death to secure the eternal election of the saints without violating human libertarian free will, without taking this free will away from us. Richard, you know that I'm passionate about arguing and defending that we have free will.
Yeah.
And perhaps God might allow this world with all of the suffering and death to secure the eternal election of the saints without depriving us of free will, so that true love with God can be experienced for eternity. I've argued in the past that true love requires free will in a genuine sense. And so if that's the goal, if that's the reason why God created humanity, is to have a true love relationship with him, then he's got to give us free will. But I think that this free will might be something that we have to have for eternity if we're going to have a love relationship with God for eternity. And so I said this. I said, you know, the gates of hell are locked from the inside. That's a famous quote from C.S. Lewis. But if that's true, then could it also be said that the gates of heaven are locked from the inside? That is
interesting.
Is it logically possible, anyway, for a person in heaven to freely choose to sin, blaspheme the Holy Spirit, and then freely choose to leave and go to hell? Is that logically possible? Even if that never happens, is it logically possible? And I say, well, perhaps it is. Yes. But the question is raised, well, why would they want to? Why would they want to? That'd be the important question to ask. You see, those in heaven would have experienced the imperfection of this world, along with all of its evil, pain, and suffering, and even the suffering that leads to death, including what seems to be gratuitous suffering from our perspective. But they would also be in an epistemic position to know that hell is even worse in the absence of God and all that's good. On top of that, those in heaven would be experiencing a personal relationship with the maximally great being who lavishes them with his perfect love and meets every single need with perfection. I mean, the question is raised, why would a saint in heaven knowingly and freely choose to leave this ultimate paradise and perfect love for the imperfection and horror of hell, a world that is worse than the one they just left, that led to their death? I mean, they would have the knowledge of good and evil and have personally experienced it through pain, evil, and suffering. Moreover, in heaven, they would have experienced maximal greatness. It doesn't seem like anyone who has experienced the imperfection of this world that we live in now and the perfection of the next world, heaven, it doesn't seem as if anybody would ever freely choose to exist in hell that was worse than the imperfection of the one they just left and already experienced. I don't know. I said perhaps this is how God can guarantee free creatures will persevere into the infinite future, and maybe that's why bad things happen to good people, including the bad things that have happened to this family. Yeah. And you know, the husband of this woman who died, my neighbor, he told me in the days leading up to the funeral, he said, "Tim, it's comforting to know how to answer the intellectual problem of evil and even what seems to be gratuitous evil, and it's good to know how to answer these questions intellectually, but man," he said, my problem right now is emotional, not intellectual. Yep. But he says, knowing the intellectual answers, he told me, he says, it doesn't make it easy, but it makes it easier. And when this question was asked during the funeral, you know, I looked at him and I'm like, is it okay if I answer this question right now? And he nodded yes. He said, please do. They need it right now. But it further cemented in my mind that apologetics isn't just for the geeky nerds like us, Richard. It's for everybody.
Yes, it is.
It's even for pastors today.
Especially for pastors.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. And what a powerful story that you can, it's not hard to even imagine that happening at any funeral. I mean, you know that whether or not those questions are voiced, those questions are there.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing to me how, because you have been equipped by God to know how to answer those questions in a loving and gracious way, but also with precision and with using the Bible, and it shows me that God puts you in those positions so that you can answer those questions because you have been equipped.
Yeah.
And I've heard from pastors who, you know, their background isn't in apologetics, and so it's like, well, is it really practical? Come on. I will tell you right now, that is one of so many stories that Tim could tell where someone just felt comfortable asking the question because they knew who Tim was and what he studies. And I promise you that if you devote yourself to this study, to apologetics, God will bring people that you never would have interacted with or had the chance to interact with because you weren't equipped.
They will come out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you have no idea where...
That's right.
Where were these people five years ago before I was studying this stuff? Mm-hmm. And so it does take work. It does take working out your brain and thinking long about these things and wrestling and taking a long time and thinking about it from different angles and reading. And it is work. It's studying a new subject. But it is so worth it. I along with being a worship pastor, I'm also a children's pastor, and those are kind of my two main roles at the church. And so I was in Sunday school yesterday with my third and fourth graders, and one thing we've been doing for the past couple weeks, partially as an experiment and partially because I know they need it, is we've been doing something called the question box.
Hmm.
And so we'll have them write down their questions that they have, and they've been asking for this, which is amazing. And so they write their questions and they put them in the box and we pull them out. And I'm expecting stuff like, you know, the finer points of the stories and the Bible stories that we're going over, you know, like, you know, we just did the triumphal entry into Jerusalem yesterday. And, but the questions are more like, this was one from a fourth grader yesterday. How do we know that God and Jesus are real?
Wow.
Other questions are like, who wrote the Bible? How do we know that our religion is right and other people are wrong?
These are coming from
fourth graders and third graders. Mm-hmm. And so my question to you again is, what would you say? Would you say, well, we know that Jesus and God are real because the Bible says so? I mean, that's correct, but that's a circular argument.
How do you know the Bible's true?
Exactly. And so for us, this is the kind of thing that we want to equip you in. We want to equip you in how to share the truth in a way that also pulls in science and pulls in philosophy, and there's lots of different avenues that are available to us because God's world and his word will never contradict.
Hmm.
And so why should we be afraid of philosophy? And so for us, we want to build a relationship with you. Like people ask the questions to Tim, submit your question, build a relationship with us, ask him to speak, read our articles. I mean, we have a purpose behind the stuff that we were writing and the things that we're doing. So be a part of it, partner with us, because we could say so many other stories about the way that apologetics has been so transformational in people's lives. And it's just what some people need. And so, do you have any final thoughts before we end it?
My mind is blown. I'm still thinking about the 8 and 9-year-olds asking some of those questions.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah, well, great. We thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Free Thinking Podcast with Richard Eng and Tim Stratton.
See you later.
Sounds good.